Welcome to the Teach the Geek podcast, where engineer and author Neil Thompson talks with STEM professionals about public speaking, a struggle for many of us. Whether you're a novice public speaker or a proficient one, you can always pick up tips on how to improve. Here's your host, Neil Thompson.
Welcome to another edition of Teach the Geek interviews. My name is Neil Thompson. I'm the founder of Teach the Geek. I work with technical professionals so they can present more effectively, especially in front of non-technical audiences. And you can learn more about it at teachthegeek.com. Again, that's teachthegeek.com. Today, my guest is Aaron Shepherd. He's a software engineer, but it wasn't always that way. Originally with doctor aspirations, he switched and went back to school to get an engineering degree. He's also an advocate for kids getting involved in STEM. And here's a fun fact. He did a TikTok calculating how hard Will Smith slapped Chris Rock at the 2022 Oscars. And I thought I was a geek. I'm interested to learn more about his decision to leave medicine for engineering, the work he does now, and the ways in which he promotes STEM to kids. Welcome to Teach the Geek interviews, Aaron.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I am so excited to be here.
Excellent. So from the bit of research I did on you, I saw that you got You started off in medicine, wanting to be a medical doctor. Where did that interest come from?
To be honest, I have a lot of medical professionals in my family. I have multiple uncles who were doctors, multiple dentists in my family, a few nurses. And so when I was growing up, I came up during the time where I wasn't sure if there was going to be a space program. This was, you know, early 2000s, they canceled the shuttle. So I was like, you know what, let me just do something that I know I would have a job in. And it just seemed to be the family practice. So that's the direction I decided to go in.
Okay. You know, I had another guest, that episode hasn't come out yet, but he wanted also to work at NASA. And when he graduated, he actually got a degree, I think, in space studies. But he didn't get into NASA for 5 years after graduating. So he had to find a whole bunch of other things to take up his time within those 5 years. Hopefully that wasn't the case for you.
No, I actually got a little lucky. So when I went down the path of medicine and I actually got into medical school and I was sitting in class and I decided to drop out after my first year, which that was a fun conversation to have with my family. They were like, "You're doing what now?" I was like, "It's okay. I got it. Trust me. I know what I'm doing." And so when I was in school the second time, having been a student before, I kind of understood the game. I understood what you had to do. I knew that it was just more than making good grades. It was also getting experience, making connections. And so while I was in school, I actually, I linked up with the South Carolina Space Grant. So they funded me for multiple research projects. They recommended me to go to work at NASA for the summers. And I think I spent three or four summers working at NASA while I was a student. And that really helped me, A of all, realize like, yes, this is really what I want to do. It's awesome. But then B of all, it gave me the professional connections that I needed to secure my current job.
Nice. Well, we have something in common. I didn't go to medical school. I actually started a doctoral program and I dropped out after the first year. And it wasn't even because there were people in my family that had PhDs. Although I will say that it was because my father said I should get a PhD, even though he doesn't have one himself. But he said that he wanted me to do it. But ultimately, you have to live your life for yourself, not for the desires of other people. So even though you have medical doctors or just people in the medical industry in your family, if that's not something you want to do, well, find the something that you want to do. So kudos to you for figuring that out before it was too late. You know, there's so many people that go through these programs and they actually finish them. And then they actually start working in that field and they realize, I never really wanted to do this. I had misgivings after that first year. And yet here I am.
Yeah. And I mean, I always say this, nobody really pushed me into medicine. I'm sorry, that's my dog barking. Nobody really pushed me into medicine. It was just, to me, it was the only viable path that I saw. After it was me really not understanding how aerospace and the industry worked. And that was just because nobody that I knew growing up really did the space side. So I didn't know that, oh, well, just because they canceled the shuttle program doesn't mean that there's a whole bunch of stuff going on. So when I talk to kids, I always encourage them to do their research and to really look into it, especially now because we have Google and the collective knowledge of all of humanity at our fingertips. So I'm like, look, guys, do your research. You think you may know what's going on, but you really don't.
I really like what you said about kids doing their research so they can make more informed decisions. You know, there's a lot of groups out there that will say that, you know, this particular group is underrepresented in this. And if you are good at, let's just say, math and science, you should be an engineer. But should you? Just because you're good at math and science does not mean you should be an engineer. You may very well go down that path, get the engineering degree, and then you're working as an engineer. And you realize, I don't like this, but I came into it because people said that you'd be throwing your life away. You wouldn't be living up to your potential if you didn't go down this path because of your talent of math and science when you were in high school. But I'm a big fan of what you just said, doing your research, figuring out what kind of things you like to do, even interviewing, doing interviews of people who are doing those type of jobs. And then you figure out, is this something I actually want to do on a daily basis? And if not, then maybe there's something else that's more appealing to you. So I'm firmly on board with what you said. You were going to say something?
Oh yeah. I was just going to say, so one thing that I'm really intentional about when I speak to people is I'm not on the bandwagon of everybody should do STEM, because the world needs more than engineers and scientists. We need business people. We need law people. We need art. We need people that do art. From my perspective, I am big on STEM appreciation. So I think I mentioned this on another podcast that I was on recently, but my job isn't for you to be like, wow, I want to be a scientist. I just want you to look at science and appreciate it the same way that like we have to take art appreciation classes. Like, I'm not an artist per se, but I can look at art and understand why it's valuable and why it's important and what's going on. And so that's the same type of message that I tried to convey with STEM.
100%, Aaron. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, when it comes down to just anything, it's, are you willing to do the work and do you have that interest? And if the answer is no to either of those questions, then maybe that's not something for you to get into. I mean, when it comes down to it, with exposing children to STEM, it's just letting them know that it's an option for them, but it's not necessarily an option that you have to take. And it's not like if you don't take it, then you wasted your life. It's just, there's more of the life than STEM. There's, as you mentioned, there's other fields that you can get into. And I don't want people getting into something because they are told that this is something they should do because of X. You know, it's you decide what you want to do because of X, not what someone else said to do. I firmly agree with that. So now I noticed that you got your degree in electrical engineering. Why'd you choose electrical?
So I have an interest in autonomous systems design, and I felt like electrical just gave me the right balance between hardware and software. And I also just, when I was looking at different classes, like I knew I didn't want to go, well, actually at the time when I was deciding, I was either electrical or computer, and I knew that I wanted more of a hardware emphasis, but I do enjoy programming and software. So electrical just gave me that balance. I also, just some of the classes were really cool. Circuit design, digital logic, control theory. What else? Some of the classes were not cool. I was not a big fan of electromagnetics. I was not a fan of DSP, digital signal processing. Like I, those classes were a little rough, but overall, like I really enjoyed the understanding of just, again, both the hardware and the software. Plus, as a hobby, electronics is much easier to get into than, say, something a bit more mechanical like cars. So there's that.
Well, I'm glad that you enjoyed it more than you didn't enjoy it, because if that was the case, then maybe that's also a cue that maybe that's not the place to be. Because ultimately, if you disliked it more than you liked it, then you end up working in it. What's to say that you're not going to dislike that too? So it's good that, you know, the pros outweighed the cons for sure. So when it comes to the work that you do now, what's your day-to-day like?
My day-to-day, I usually have a couple of meetings. It is NASA, it is the government. You will sit in a lot of meetings. That's just the way it is. But it really depends on what phase of the development cycle that we're in. Right now, we are heavy on documenting and testing our current software version. But then within the next few months, we'll actually be rewriting and working on our next revision of the software. So to explain briefly what I work on. I work in the flight dynamics facility at NASA Goddard, and I am on the Roman Space Telescope project. So it's going to be the successor to the Hubble. And my job specifically within the flight dynamics facility is to help write the tracking software for it. So when it flies overhead, we can see it from our tracking stations all around the world. And the software that we write predicts where it's going and where it will be. And I tell people my job is to make sure that billion-dollar telescope doesn't get lost in space.
Nice. You know, it's interesting you mentioned this because I actually had a previous guest. His name is Dr. Maura Bajwa, and he's a professor, I believe, at University of Texas, Austin. And his main research focus is space junk and trying to get rid of it. And I remember we were talking about the space junk, and he was mentioning that there's a number of initiatives that are out to the various countries in the world to pool their money together to get rid of all the space junk. And I remember thinking, well, not all the countries are responsible for putting it up there in the first place, so why should they be responsible for getting rid of it? But he said that, actually, I'm trying to remember what his answer is, but I guess it's to the betterment of everyone to remove it. But it's just when you were mentioning telescopes, and it just reminded me of the space junk conversation I had with him.
Yeah, so, and I actually, I'll go on.
Oh, well, please continue.
I was going to say, I've actually done research in managing orbital debris and all the ways you can get rid of it. So I'm very familiar with that problem. And it's one of those things that it's not bad now, but it has the potential to be, because that junk is coming, 17,000-18,000 miles an hour, and it hits you. It can put a little tiny piece of something can dent like a foot and a half hole in concrete going at orbital velocity. So it's a major problem to solve. Like it may not be a major problem now, but it's something that we as an industry definitely want to stay ahead of.
Yeah, absolutely. So I also mentioned in the intro that you do a lot of outreach to children. In what ways do you do this outreach?
So I've done different things. I've done public speaking. I've done workshops. I've taught at summer camps. I do robotics a lot because, again, the autonomous systems background. And honestly, kids just really love robots. Like you give a robot to a kid and the kid is like, this is awesome. I want to do science. And I'm like, cool. It helps to keep them engaged and all of that. And my job, I guess, whenever I do these outreach events is I am going for the wow factor. I didn't even know you could do this kind of thing. I have all kinds of robots. I have robots that you can drive by thinking. I have robots that you can talk to and if you tell it to turn, it'll turn. And then I break down the science. I break down the science and technology as to why these things work in the first place. And my big goal is to just make you go, wow. And then my second big goal is to show like, okay, I know that when you're in math class, it looks a little boring, but if you understand what's going on in class and you understand, the basic concepts of science, you can build some really cool things. And so that's what I strive for in these outreach events.
That's wonderful, because it's one thing to have that cool factor, but the underlying reason as to why these things work as they do. I mean, especially if you want to go into it as a career, that's something you're going to have to understand. And not only that, but if you want to go into engineering, there's certain classes you'll have to take in high school to be prepared to go into an engineering curriculum. And do you have the interest of moving past just, if this is cool, to, okay, I actually am willing to take calculus. Actually, I'm willing to take differential equations and all the various classes that you have to take to get an engineering degree. I mean, it's all important.
Yeah. And then what I like to tell people is, even if it doesn't directly apply to what you do, it is an exercise in your ability to analyze problems and to solve things that you haven't seen before. And sometimes, I mean, honestly, it's just the price you pay. Like if you want to build the cool space stuff, you got to sit through differential equations. Like that's just what it is. Like it's not always fun. It's not always glamorous, but if you stick with it and do the work, then the potential for cool things is really on the other side.
Yeah, absolutely. So what made you decide to make that TikTok video about Will Smith slapping Chris Rock?
So again, like I'm always looking for ways to make science interesting. And I feel like that is a major challenge within our field, especially for those of us who like to talk about it on social media, because science is as its own thing is often very long and tedious and boring. So if there's ever a time where I can show like a, hey, this is a really cool application of the stuff you learned in high school physics, because that's what I did in the TikTok video, is I just, it's all high school physics. And one thing that I noticed, because I actually like read all my comments, there were a lot of people commenting like, wow, I didn't even know you can do this. Like, this is so cool. I just learned about this in physics class a few weeks ago. So it's just, again, going for the, I didn't even know this was like how you can apply the math. That's my mission overall on social media. And then also just making it fun. Like a lot of times it's like, oh yeah, because even when I'm talking about space on TikTok, like unless you're into space, like you're like, okay, whatever. But everybody likes entertainment. Everybody likes the Oscars. So finding a way to make the science apply to that, again, just gives people a different lens and a different perspective on what our field actually can be used to do.
Nice. You know, Aaron, when I first started this podcast, it was about public speaking and the public speaking journeys of those that have technical backgrounds, and still is to this point. I mean, it still is at this point, but it's also about career journeys too. And I remember when I first started when I first started working, actually it was my second job, I had to give presentations in front of management, and I wasn't very good at it. And I got better at it over time, but those first few presentations were rough. And I eventually came to the realization that this is something that I need to get better at. When did you come to the realization that being adept at giving presentations or public speaking in general could be of benefit to you?
I have always kind of been a I was that kid that got in trouble for talking too much. So the idea of talking in public was nothing. It's just always kind of been in me. But I would say, especially within while I was in school the second time, I found that while I may not be the most, I definitely wasn't like the top of my class, but because I could articulate A, what was going on, or B, what I needed in a situation, that often made things very advantageous for me. Like, when I'm co-oping and something comes up, being able to just effectively communicate in front of my team, in front of my management, hey, this is what's going on. This is what I think the problem is. This is what I need. It really is the X factor in anything that you do, but especially engineering, because we're dealing with problems. I would say while I was in school, the second time is when I realized, like, hey, communication is kind of like the big thing that that makes engineering go. I mean, we've literally have had rockets crash because one team thought that we were on metric and the other team thought that they were on imperial units or SAE. And when I say we, I just mean as an industry, not anything specific. I think this happened over, I can't remember what project this was, but it happened like maybe 15 years ago. But things like that, where it's just being able to communicate is the difference between your rocket taking off and your rocket crashing.
Wow. That's crazy that you mentioned. But yeah, that communication piece is it's really important. And it's one that, as I mentioned, it wasn't something that was apparent to me at first, but it certainly became apparent to me once I started giving those presentations and was sweating through my shirt because I was really nervous about giving those presentations. Do you have a process for putting your presentations together? And if so, what is it?
So I have a very it actually I learned it during my first summer at NASA. Very specific things. When I'm doing PowerPoints, minimal words on the PowerPoints. Like nobody wants to read paragraphs. Quick to the point. And as far as like when in general, when I do presentations, especially if I can, I always try to run through it once by myself, just to get a feel for what I'm trying to say. But my thing is always be direct, always be always be direct, always be confident, if that makes sense. Even because, to be honest, like, even there, half the time I don't know what I'm saying anyways, but I'm going to make it sound like I know what I'm saying, because that's how you get ahead. And that's, and I'm not saying that in the bad way. I'm not advocating that you lie, but people can sense confidence. And if you, even if you don't know, just being able to say, I don't know, and saying that with confidence is a game changer. And I feel like a lot of us, especially us more technical people, struggle with that, where it's like, cause we're, what do you mean you don't know? Like, blah, 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 blah. I mean, I just had a meeting the other day where somebody asked something and my default response is, yeah, I don't know, but I can look into that and get back to you. And then you just follow up. But as far as when you're making presentations, minimal words on the PowerPoints, as far as speaking in a crowd, again, if you need to run through it before, run through it before, but whatever you do, do it. Like, don't, even if you are nervous, don't let that show.
You know, I find it interesting about the you saying, I don't know. You know, when I first started giving those presentations, when I was a sweaty mess, I used to lie. I was that technical person who was afraid to say I don't know, because I figured these people, especially the people in the audience that I was speaking to with senior management, I thought, I'm being paid to know. So what do you mean the answer is I don't know? It never even occurred to me that the answer could be I don't know, but I'll get the answer, because it's not as if I wouldn't have to give those presentations again, because it's a monthly thing when I was giving those presentations. This wasn't a one-off type of presentation. But eventually I got the hint that maybe I shouldn't lie about this. And I'm firmly agree with you also when it comes to minimal text on slides, because when you have a whole bunch of text, well, one, it's a crutch for the presenter. They're just going to read, so they're not going to look at the audience, which isn't good if you want to engage the audience. And then two, the audience is going to read and they're not going to listen to what you're saying. So essentially you could have just sent them the slides. There was no reason for you to present anything. I could have read it. I read it at my own convenience. Why am I sitting here listening to you read? I could read too. So it's like, you definitely want to have more minimal text. And not only that, but it when you have minimal text, it forces people to either listen or ignore you. They don't have the option to read the slide. So now it's real. It's you better be engaging. You better be looking at people, because you definitely want, especially as decision makers in the audience, you definitely want them listening to you. You know, you mentioned earlier being confident to hide the nerves. So what do you do to hide your nerves?
That is a good question. To be honest, one thing that I'm very mindful of is that when I get nervous, I talk faster. And so when I'm giving public presentations a lot of time, or like when I'm presenting to my team or my management, I actually will slow down my speech a little bit. And I might, this is unique to me, where I might draw out the last part of my word. But again, I'm trying to slow things down so that way, again, it because if you're nervous and talking fast, it starts that feedback cycle where, like, because you're nervous, you become more nervous. But if I slow things down, just breathe, talk through what I'm trying to talk through, that really, that typically helps me out a lot.
Nice. So if you were to give one piece of advice to anybody who is listening or watching this conversation on becoming more effective at giving presentations or public speaking generally, what would it be?
If you're in school, I highly recommend taking a public speaking class if they don't make it part of the curriculum. For me, again, because I do a lot of speaking already, it helps reinforce what I've learned in class. And once you get past a certain point, you're like, okay, it's not that you stop becoming nervous. It's just, all right, whatever. You've done this before. It's been fine. It'll be fine again. It's same thing. Like if you grew up playing sports, where, like, in my case, it's like, I think the first time, like, I really competed on a high level, I was nervous. But then after that, I was like, all right, look, it just becomes normal. And so you try to get rid of, like, the myth. You just try to make it part of your normal routine as much as possible. And it doesn't stop the nerves, it doesn't stop the need to prepare, but it makes the process a lot more fluid for you.
Excellent. Well, this has been a great conversation. Thanks again for being a guest, Aaron. How can people get in touch with you?
Yes, thank you so much for having me on. All of my social medias, the social media handles are the same. It's at Space Cadet Shep. That's Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, I think maybe Facebook. But yes, I love connecting to people. I love connecting with people. I just like meeting people, especially now that I work from home. I'm like, oh, I just want to talk to people.
Wonderful. Well, everyone, that marks the end of another edition of Teach the Geek interviews. My name is Neil Thompson, founder of Teach the Geek, and you can learn more about it at teachthegeek.com. Again, that's teachthegeek.com. Until next time, take care and stay safe. Thanks, Aaron.
Yes, thanks, Neil.
Well, everyone, that marks another episode in the can. I hope you enjoyed it. If you like these episodes and want to support Teach the Geek, please subscribe, share, and like on any of your favorite podcast platforms, or on all of them. Also, if you prefer to watch the episodes, head on over to the YouTube channel at youtube.teachthegeek.com. Until next time.